Coming up on Tech News Today, has Linux conquered the government and next the world? Has Microsoft conquered mobile? Has LG conquered TV apps? What is going on? We'll tell you who's conquering what next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, June 20th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell your iPhone, iPad, iPod, or Android smartphones from your home or office so you can get the latest versions. Get a risk-free quote that's good for 30 days at Gazelle.com. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continual, and unlimited backup for your computer files for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use promo code TNT and get 2 bonus months with purchase. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And, of course, Sarah at Le Web in London, which just wrapped up today. You were telling us about it. Sounds like it went well. Kind of a test case for them.
Yeah, exactly. They have a conference in Paris in December every year. I've gone for the last few years and was asked to speak. Well, not necessarily speak, but kind of moderate panels for a few panels this year here in London. And it's been really fun. The turnout has been good. The conference is smaller than the one in Paris, which is actually kind of nice, even though I've seen some familiar faces. There are definitely some UK folks that have come out that, for whatever reason, didn't make it through the channel to the Paris version of the event. And it's a really good group of people. And it's always fun to get a little bit out of our little valley bubble and meet some people who have a different perspective on things.
Absolutely. Helping us with our perspective today, welcome back to the show, Jason Heiner, editor-in-chief of TechRepublic.com. How's it going, Jason?
Going great. Glad to be here.
Thanks to have you along, as always. We got some good stuff to talk about. Of course, the Windows Phone announcement this morning. A Linux article from Tech Republic that caught my eye. But let's start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Microsoft kept the announcements coming with a presentation at the Windows Phone Summit this morning. Windows Phone 8 will come in the fall and ship by the holidays. Among the new features discussed, the OS will get a shared core with Windows 8, allowing easier cross-platform development. That means when you write a mobile game for a PC, you can make it work on the phone in less than a day, and other things like that.
Unnamed sources tell Reuters that Microsoft kept its PC partners in the dark about the Surface launch until as late as last Friday, and even then didn't offer the name of the tablet or its specs. But sources at both Acer and Asus Tech say that they heard zilch before the actual press conference itself. After 37 years of licensing software to OEMs, it'll be a very interesting year for Windows tablets now that Microsoft itself is a competitor.
You know, all we are saying is give Patent Peace a chance. Bloomberg reports Yahoo and Facebook are negotiating a settlement to their patent infringement dispute. Yahoo's lawyers asked for a 2-week extension to file replies in the lawsuit. The lawyers also asked for a 2-week delay in a motion hearing, which is now set for August 10th. Yahoo started the suit under former CEO Scott Thompson, raising the ire of many in Silicon Valley. Interim Yahoo CEO Ross Levinson, he's adopted a more friendly approach.
The Samsung Galaxy S3 is in for a rough launch, ladies and gentlemen. Hold on. T-Mobile and Sprint are supposed to get it to you first, but T-Mobile now says they will only sell the phone online and in its top 29 retail markets starting tomorrow. And I wouldn't even count on that because Sprint was going to sell it online and now says they're going to delay all their sales until next week because they're not going to get enough units from Samsung. It's selling too well, though pre-orders, if you did pre-order from Sprint, should ship by June 21st. Verizon and AT&T are already taking pre-orders, but they won't ship the phone until sometime next month.
The Waterloo Record reports that RIM has begun slashing its workforce by between 2,000 to 6,000 positions in an effort to save $1 billion by the end of this fiscal year. Sources say hundreds of jobs from the manufacturing team have already been terminated in the last 24 hours. There's a lot of forum posts on crackberry.com, etc. A RIM spokesperson confirmed that some positions have been cut, but did not elaborate on actual numbers.
The new version of Swipe is out. That's the awesome keyboard that lets you trace out words on your Android device, amongst other things. The new version lets you add spoken words to its dictionary and can now download over 55 languages. There's even a dedicated dragon button so you can dictate to your heart's content.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has requested political asylum from Ecuador. I don't know. I guess they seem like a likely choice. He is actually under the protection of the country's embassy in London while Ecuador evaluates his request. Assange is an Australian citizen who is wanted for questioning in Sweden. The UK has approved his extradition and refused to rehear the case.
You know what the world needs now?
Love, sweet love.
Well, love, sweet love?
That and Ultrabooks. More Ultrabooks.
Ultrabooks, sweet Ultrabooks.
Getting some more within the next 10 days, according to All Things D's Bonnie Chaw. Acer announced that its latest Aspire Timeline Ultra M5 Ultrabooks will be available by the end of the month. The M5 series gets Ivy Bridge processors, comes with the 14 and 15.6-inch versions, is about 0.8 inches thick, and weighs 4.3 pounds. Pricing will range from $680 to $830.
The Washington Post reports that the Flame malware was jointly developed by Israel and the United States. The goal of Flame was to slow Iran's efforts to develop a nuclear weapon. According to one of the Post's sources, Flame and Stuxnet are only a part of a larger assault that is ongoing to this day. Neither nation has officially commented on the matter.
Google is not going to pay a dime for their infringement of Oracle's intellectual property. Yet, Oracle filed a stipulation Monday asking Google to pay $0 in statutory damages for the 9 lines of range check code they used in Android. That's right, $0. Now, this doesn't mean Oracle has given up. The move speeds up proceedings, which gets them a chance to appeal faster. And that's a look at the news fuse. We got some discussion of the Windows Phone. We'll give you some more details, find out everybody's opinion of that in a second. But I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, Ford, and the My Ford mobile smartphone app. For electric vehicles, with the My Ford mobile app, you can take advantage of the value charging feature powered by Microsoft. Based on your local utility's participation, it allows Ford customers to take advantage of off-peak or reduced rates. It saves you money without a big complicated setup process. You do it right there on your smartphone. You can also use something called Go Times to precondition your vehicle's temperature before your departure. That conserves battery energy. You're not wasting a bunch of time heating or cooling something that doesn't need to be heated or cooled anymore. Monitor charging right from the app. Get alerts. Find charging stations and plan out your drive. Monitor how far you drive and how much CO2 you save by not using gas. The MyFord mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Want to try it out? Why don't you go check out a Ford Focus Electric? They're available for purchase right now. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is on a lot of dealers' lots, or just go to the web. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And we thank Ford for their support of Tech News Today. So Ayaz Akhtar and I were joined by Mary Jo Foley today and this morning covering the Windows Phone Developer Summit, where they announced some details about Windows Phone 8. Now, these were developer-oriented details, not a lot of consumer-facing stuff, but it has impact on the consumer, and that means we're probably going to get a few more details about Windows Phone before it launches. As we mentioned, it's coming this fall. Qualcomm confirmed it's a Snapdragon S4 processor, and Joe Belfiore, manager of the Windows Phone program at Microsoft, came on stage and came up with 8 announcements because it's Windows Phone 8. Multi-core chipsets will be supported, focusing on dual core to begin with. And that also comes along with new screen resolutions and micro SD support. You'll be able to move your apps to a micro SD card. Internet Explorer 10 comes to Windows Phone 8. Native code for developers. You want to write C++, you can run it directly in Windows Phone 8. You also get DirectX and better graphics driver support. Better sharing with NFC, and that goes right hand in hand with the wallet experience. A Google Wallet is stuck in my brain. Microsoft announced the new wallet experience that'll eventually work with ISIS. They'll be using Nokia maps, not big maps, Nokia map technology from Navtech. They announced a lot of enterprise stuff, better encryption, office apps, the ability to manage enterprise, and a change to the start screen, which is sort of a cosmetic change, but you can make your icons, your little tiles, wide, medium, and small. And they got rid of that right gutter. Also some more colors for the start screen. So, Jason, I assume you probably followed this announcement this morning yourself. What'd you think?
Yeah. The one thing that you didn't mention that's really important to a couple dozen people is that if you're on the current version of Windows 7, including the Superphone they just announced, right, the Nokia Lumia 900, you will not be able to upgrade to Windows Phone 8. All Windows Phone 8 will have to be on new hardware. So that's the other thing, and we could talk more about that in a second. But put that aside for a sec. This is really where they kind of needed to be with Windows Phone 8, right? It's a lot of times you have this with these sort of 2.0, 3.0 kind of announcements. You get where you sort of needed to be at 1.0. It happened with iPhone, certainly happened with Android. You know, Windows Phone's no exception. 2.0, 3.0, whichever one you want to call this. This is almost more like, you know, 1.5 was sort of their last upgrade. All the stuff that they're adding, all the stuff that they're doing. Another thing that they added, which is really interesting, obviously, to a lot of my audience, which is, you know, business and corporate and enterprise, is that they're adding a lot of the business features that were missing from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8. So a lot of the sort of encryption and being able to sideload apps securely and some file system things that, you know, matter for security features, and secure boot is another one. Anyway, all of this stuff taken together make this a really significant release. It's just a question of how late is too late. Android and iPhone are sucking all of the air out of the smartphone ecosystem right now. Just ask RIM and ask Nokia. And it's really tough. I think the one thing they've done is they're smart about it in, I think, trying to go after some of the business market that's still there where they can replace some of the big RIM contracts. There's still a lot of big governments, a lot of big healthcare and financial organizations that are still, you know, have a lot of BlackBerries. They haven't necessarily gone to iPhone or Android yet. And there's still some wins available there. I don't know. With the straight consumer, I just still see Windows Phone it's going to have a tough time competing against iPhone and Android. There's nothing so significantly better that's going to make you, you know, pick it over an iPhone or Android device that you've probably been coveting or planning on if you're already thinking about your next upgrade, which, you know, most people tend to be that are crazy about their smartphones. So, that's my quick take on it.
So one of the things about Windows Phone 7 that was a problem was it wasn't winning over like hardcore nerds. The specs weren't exactly spectacular. The resolution wasn't that great. The phones were very similar to each other. And the thing is, the way these devices spread is you go to your friends. If you're the tech person in your group of friends, you go, okay, well, this new Windows Phone 8, it can take care of all these as dual core. It has an HD display. You have apps that work with Windows RT potentially working over here. This device is going to be a better device than the old one. And that's how you spread that out. Additionally, with the enterprise functions of Windows Phone 8, IT administrators would be much more likely to go, why don't you take this device instead of bring your own? It'll work like your Windows tablet, it'll work like your phone, and it'll be very similar. So I think this is the OS they needed a couple of years ago, but the fact is coming out with Windows 8 in the fall, it'll definitely have, again, I'm going to use that word, synergy. It's going to have a good marketing effort. When you see the tiles, you'll know them everywhere.
It doesn't even necessarily need to be in place at Bring Your Own. They can just encourage you to bring your own Windows Phone device, you know, on a list of BlackBerries and other things. You're going to get true multitasking. That's another benefit of this shared core with Windows. So that you'll be able to take advantage of VoIP and VPN right from the background. In fact, the dialer will be able to dial VoIP. It doesn't have to be Skype that's running. You can put it in your app. App developers can put it in. Also, voice recognition will be available to devs. That's something that you don't get in iOS, is the ability to use Siri in your app. You'll be able to use Tell Me in your app. You can argue about which one's better or worse, but it's an advantage for developers, and they are announcing they finally hit the watermark of 100,000 apps. They're getting some bigger name apps like Draw Something and Words with Friends. Sarah, has the app ecosystem progressed enough with Windows Phone, do you think, to bring in some bigger developers like this?
Yeah, you know, I think you guys are all right on the money when it sounds a little bit like a, hey, Microsoft's late to the game. They're announcing a lot of features that allows them to kind of catch up with iOS and Android, who've been doing this a little bit longer. That said, we've got 100,000 apps with big names, the kind of apps that people would expect to be on a lot of platforms. Microsoft devices are going to be on a variety of the big carriers. And I think something that I know Ayaz and I, all of us really have talked about in the past is, what will keep people interested in the Microsoft ecosystem? Windows 8, what is going to be cool enough for someone to want to buy these phones and either to switch over or upgrade from a feature phone? You know, the Lumia, even though it sold really well, seems to kind of have fizzled out, and it was on the cheap end of all of this. So in a way, we all looked at that and said, well, you know, you're offering a really great phone for not a lot of money. And some people were interested, but I wouldn't call it a runaway hit. So at this point, it's like, okay, well, we've got a lot of other phones, obviously. We're going to have a plethora of phones to choose from. But what's really going to be that phone that, you know, what's the Galaxy S3 mm-hmm. of this whole thing that makes people need and want this phone because it's the cool phone? I look at all these specs and I say, this seems like a really, really good OS. But again, yeah, I don't think, particularly for Android users, there's something so compelling that makes people want to switch.
Show me the hardware. Let's get
the other. Sorry, Jason. I was just going to say, you know, the one thing that could make a difference here is something that is sort of going on in the background. One of the reasons I mentioned earlier that you're not going to be able to upgrade from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8. My sense of this is they're basically ditching all of what was in Windows Phone 7 and replacing it. This is a new OS that essentially looks like Windows Phone 7 that is built on Windows RT. They're the sort of ARM-based version of Windows 8. That's my sense. That's not confirmed. That's just my own speculation. But here's one of the things that makes that cool, and where there could be a kind of a, not a killer feature, but you know, an attractive feature, is they're talking about you being able to take apps from mobile and bring them to the desktop, right? So games and things like that. That sort of piqued my interest. That's something that maybe people might get excited about. There might be, you know, mobile apps have gotten so good that there are times when I'm doing stuff on a desktop that it's like, man, I wish I had that app like I had on my phone, because on my phone, it's perfect. It's simple. It does it right. It does exactly what I need. And on the desktop, you sort of, it's like, well, I got to go to some website, or, you know, there isn't really an app for it. Like, maybe they can, there's an opportunity here that maybe they can bridge this sort of mobile app thing with the desktop app thing. And you know, maybe mobile apps are almost kind of like desktop widgets in a way in some cases, but that could be really interesting. And it's going to be interesting to watch this fact that they really look, it really looks like they are taking the full blown Windows and dropping it on a phone. And while that seems really interesting and it does have this possibility to it, there could be some problems, you know, with that as well, right? Think about malware, all the malware that there is for targeting Windows. If all of a sudden now you can target that on phones, and this phone could be a malware target.
You can write once, run anywhere for malware too, is what
exactly.
You're saying. Yeah.
Exactly. You got it.
I think we should point out that Windows Phone 7 users are not entirely getting this shaft. There's going to be a version of Windows Phone called Windows Phone 7.8, and that 8 is picked very particularly. Essentially, Windows Phone 7 users will get all of the forward-facing features of Windows Phone 8, like the new start screen interface, a lot of the UI, the user interface stuff, will be available to them. What Microsoft's trying to say is, when we built Windows Phone 8, we built it from the ground up to take advantage of better hardware, multi-core hardware. We wanted it to be able to handle native code. We didn't feel like we needed to put that on these older devices. It was a waste of resources. So we've got Windows Phone 7.8 that will not leave Windows Phone 7 users behind. It will allow them to experience all the advantages of Windows Phone 8, except for the hardware advantages. And those hardware advantages they couldn't experience anyway because they have older hardware. Do you buy that, Ayaz?
Sort of. I mean, when I keep thinking about 7.8, it's not like your phone won't work. Your old phone works fine. You're not going to, I guess you wouldn't be able to have access to apps made for Windows Phone 8. But for every Windows Phone 8 user, it's going to be like, great, I have all the old apps, because the apps from Windows Phone 7 will run on Windows Phone 8. I don't think it goes the other way, though. So I think whether you'll be able to get newer apps or not, that's, you're kind of stagnant there. But, I mean, the Windows Phone devices were sold to pretty much the diehards. I mean, it was a hard sell in general, and so the fact that potentially Microsoft is ticking off a consumer base, it's not something they usually do. They usually try to please everybody to somewhat disastrous results. But this, they're ticking off pretty much their most loyal fan base, and who probably will be forgiving enough to move on to Windows Phone 8, because this is the real thing that they wanted.
I agree. So few people bought Windows Phone 7 that's sort of the good thing here, is right. They can tick some of them off. I mean, the real diehards, like I was saying, bought it. And so, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to go over to Android? I mean, most of these people sort of, they hate that bought Windows Phone. I mean, they really wanted a Windows Phone. They did not want Google. They did not want Apple. So what are they going to do? Go to Android now? No, probably not.
Ties in.
Also, Windows Phone 7.8 rounds up to 8.
It's a magic number.
You know, it's elementary math. We also have some more Microsoft news regarding Surface. Some of the partners are starting to admit when they found out that Microsoft was going to compete with them by making hardware.
Right. As Sarah mentioned in the news views, these partners got notification as early as last Friday. So the invites went out on Thursday. Microsoft tells some partners on Friday, and then on Monday they tell everybody, hey, look, we have a tablet.
At least they told him ahead of time.
A little bit, so there's nothing they could do about it. Steve Ballmer told reporters that the company had informed its largest hardware manufacturing partners, but didn't exactly tell when. However, there's a report from DigiTimes that says Acer's founder is quoted as saying, Microsoft has no real intention to sell its own branded tablet PCs, and once that purpose is realized, Microsoft will not offer more models. So I guess the thing is, do you guys believe this fact that Microsoft potentially would be entering the market just to kind of like just jumpstart it and then just back off entirely? It just doesn't seem like putting in all that R&D to build a tablet and to back off. It just doesn't seem like it adds up.
I also think that Acer's founder, how is he in a position to even know that? He would probably like that to be the case, so that Acer has fewer competitors. But it's like, what if the Surface is a slam dunk? I mean, Microsoft's not going to back away just because they were trying to jumpstart their market and they were successful.
Some partner relations rep was trying to calm him down. Like, look, we're probably not even going to make any more of these.
Yeah, exactly.
We're only saying we're making one. We're not saying we're making these for years, right? I don't know. I think something's lost in translation maybe with what the guy said or something, because that's a vain hope. But he sort of has made some he's misspoken in the past about a number of things like this, and so I think that maybe he's speaking hopefully and not on any inside information.
Now, another DigiTimes report says the Surface with Windows RT is going to cost over $600, and the Pro version with the x86 chipset is going to be over $800. If these numbers are true, it doesn't look like Microsoft would be directly competing. I mean, because theoretically, again, these other manufacturers will subsidize their tablets and their other Windows 8 devices with bloatware. So Windows, the Microsoft version, would be probably more expensive. So is this Microsoft's way of maybe appeasing people to say, look, we're making the premium version. You guys can still
sell.
We're
not going to compete with you on price. Yeah, only on features.
Just on features and on clean install.
I don't know. You look at all the features that they announced in that thing, and I said this thing is at least $500 or $600. The RT version. There's no way they could have gotten under. And the fact that they're charging a licensing fee, you know, it's what the reports that have come out is that they're charging an $83 licensing fee for the software, right? Well, Microsoft gets that for free. So I just don't see how HP, Lenovo, Acer, these other guys are going to be able to get under the price of Microsoft, whatever Microsoft. I think that's one of the reasons Microsoft had to do a tablet. There's no way that their partners were going to be come out with decent hardware and they have that $83 licensing fee. Remember, Android tablets, no licensing fee. Apple, obviously no licensing fee because they do the software themselves. that was going to kill the whole Windows tablets, Windows 8 tablets, before they were going to be dead on arrival. I think that's one of the reasons Microsoft had to do it. And I just don't see anybody coming in under them, or at least I think they're going to even struggle to come in with price parity to Microsoft.
If those prices end up to be true, of course. Those are DigiTimes prices. 50% chance, usually.
They sound right to me.
They sound believable, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Microsoft does their internal accounting. Maybe Panache has to, send a charge back over to the Windows operating system department for $83 for every one of these things that he sells. Who knows? Weird things happen in accounting. We got a story about Kindle Fire coming across the seas. Sarah, you're across the seas. Perfect place to talk about this story.
Yeah, when I read the story earlier, I kind of had to laugh because I've been having conversations with people. I'm in the UK right now, but in Europe in general, really just kind of outside of the US, who have gripes about the way that something like the Amazon Kindle is not even available here. Even if you might really like the device, even if it would sell like hotcakes here, it's just one of those things that we know, but being US-centric, you don't really feel until you get out of the country and realize sometimes how fragmented this stuff is. Amazon today officially opened its App Store apps outside of the US to developers from the UK, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain can now submit apps to the App Store. Amazon says more countries are coming in the near future, but these are at least the European countries on launch. Now, at least at the time of our recording, if you go to amazon.co.uk/App Store, where one would assume the App Store would live, it's not actually live yet, but it was announced today, so have to assume it's coming pretty soon. And this is just really the next phase in Amazon's App Store. Don't really specific numbers because Amazon loves to not do that, but they say they have tens of thousands of apps at this time. Jim Adkins, who's the VP of the Amazon App Store, says that some devs have reported that they've doubled their revenue since Amazon started allowing in-app purchasing, which is something that they started allowing recently, as well as Test Drive, we've talked about in the past, where you can try before you buy type of a thing for apps, which is obviously very attractive to people who don't want to spend money on an app that they're not going to use. So the App Store is it's moving in the right direction. It's certainly growing, and it's certainly expanding. And like I said, Kindle Fire is not something that you can use right now, but this signals to me that it's coming eventually, and obviously you have to have an App Store that works internationally before you have a device that depends on stuff like that to work internationally as well. And, we've been talking about Microsoft tablets and Microsoft coming out with a Surface and all of, the competition that they're entering even in the Windows 8 space, and the fact that we've got Kindle Fire competitor that we talked about yesterday on the show. It makes perfect sense to me that the Kindle Fire has to become, a global gadget.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the few things that Apple worries about, if they worry about anything at all, is that the Kindle Fire starts coming at them in other markets. Because as we've seen all these reports, that the one thing that is eating market share in tablets for Android is generally the Kindle Fire.
I mean, the Kindle Fire is going to have some serious competition, like Sarah was saying, with the under $200 tablets. NVIDIA is making a push for that. We're going to see powerful 7-inch tablets in the summer. But the thing that Amazon has, and one of the reasons that the Kindle Fire has been so successful, is that entire ecosystem. As long as Amazon can set up those content deals in other countries, as they have been, then they'll be able to provide this device to everyone as a consumption device.
It's also going to pave the way for their bigger device, right? They're probably going to come out with a 10-inch device. They're probably going to come out with a better tablet. Their ecosystem is really strong. I feel strongly that the tablet is an ecosystem game. And you look at the two tablets that have been successful, which have been iPad and Amazon's, Kindle Fire. Both companies had the ecosystem of content and software lined up, at launch, close to launch. And that's why they were successful. It's a big reason for the success of both. And so Amazon, all these other tablets are looking at going small. I think Amazon's going to go a little bigger and become more of an iPad competitor, which it's really sort of an iPad Lite is kind of what it's making its waves as right now. So I think Amazon is definitely worth tracking, and certainly I do think that that if there's anybody Apple's worried about, probably more than Microsoft right now, it's Amazon.
We got a few more stories. Go ahead, Sarah.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, finish up.
I was just going to say right before we move on that they're also making it more attractive to developers, which is something that they want to do. They want to retain interest. 70-30 split revenue share for apps, regardless if they're paid apps or if they're free apps that allow in-app purchases. If you're wondering, well, what's the difference? How did it change? Paid apps used to have two levels of commission. So either 70% of the app sales price or 20% of its list price, whichever one was the bigger number. So it's sort of the next evolution at Amazon saying, devs, come to us. We're the cool app store, at least to be part of, if not exclusively, certainly along with your Android and your iOS apps.
All right, let's take a break.
It's the Android app.
Thank our sponsor. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. If you want any of these gadgets, you need some cash. And a great way to get cash, get rid of the old gadgets. You don't want them cluttering up the garage. They're going to, you know, take up space that you should be parking your car in there for. So send them to Gazelle. Turn them into money that you can then use to buy brand new gadgets or anything else you want. It's your cash. Do whatever you want with it. Go to gazelle.com. Get a risk-free quote today. It's good for 30 days, so it doesn't hurt. Go put in that old HTC cell phone. Put in that old iPad that you got, that old iPad 1, that Mac, and find out how much you can get. Just accurately describe the condition. Tell them what wires and everything you have. They'll give you a quote. Like I said, it's locked in for 30 days. You can take some time to think about it. When you're ready, print up the label that they give you, slap it on the box, send it away to Gazelle. They'll get you cash quickly and efficiently. You can get a check. They actually don't send cash through the mail. That's not safe. But actually, they can send it to you by PayPal. That's faster. Or choose an Amazon gift card, and you get 5% more. It's a great way to recycle gadgets. Get them back where somebody else can use them. You get some cash without having to mess with it. All you do is send them the gadget and take the money, and then you can get your new gadgets. Remember, just like when you drive a car off a lot, your gadgets lose value over time. So go to gazelle.com now. Get the best offer. Find out what your gadget is worth. Do it now, because the sooner you do, the more money your gadgets will be worth and the faster the money's in your hands. Visit gazelle.com for your risk-free quote today, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Mighty Text is getting a little buzz on the blogs. Is this the solution to SMS? Will we finally kill SMS with this, Sarah?
Well, it's like actually keeping SMS alive.
It's life support for SMS.
It is, and I know that I've been a big proponent of die, SMS, die, because there's so many third-party apps that use data the way that it mimics SMS to the point where it's like, hey, wouldn't it be nice if none of us had to pay for an SMS plan? Well, Mighty Text is attempting to keep SMS alive. For Android users, wouldn't you like to be able to receive text on your phone? I'm holding up an iPhone, but if I had an Android phone, that's what I would hold up. But also, if your phone's in the other room, or maybe you left it at the office, or for whatever reason, if it's not in front of you, you can get the same SMS text on your computer, or pretty much on any device at all. And certainly, yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, Chromebook or whatever. That's what Mighty Text is aiming to do. So anybody who's saying right now, well, wait, you could do that with Google Voice. It is similar to Google Voice, but it's kind of better for certain people who don't like the idea of then having to give out a separate Google Voice number. It's the same actual number. So here's what's going on. This is actually rebranded from a company called Texty that's been around for a few years. A couple of Google alums started the company, and they rebranded it last year as Mighty Text, but it was a Chrome extension. So certainly a lot more limited than the app that has been launched today. But they had a really good ramp up, really, a following. 250,000 users over a year, 2 million messages per day. They say they're gearing up to cross the 1 billion texts sent thresholds. And now, of course, they have a web app. So it lives in the cloud. It's basically, you can think of it as you're remote accessing the information on your phone. So it's not really that all of a sudden your computer has become some sort of a mobile phone that can receive SMS. It's just a way for you to get all of those messages that you would be getting on your phone anyway. So you can get it from any device. And what Mighty Text is doing, since it's kind of just remote access to what your phone already has, they're not actually paying for the cost of SMS, which
is something that... So you still have to have an SMS plan then to make that work.
Yeah. I mean, you do. And the thing is that most of us don't have the option not to have an SMS plan. I have an SMS plan that's like, I have the least amount of text messages per month, but I don't actually have the option to have nothing. And for carriers who don't want SMS to die because it's how they get money from people like us, this is actually a good way for Mighty Text to kind of get in good with these companies. Maybe they'd be more inclined to partner with Mighty Text down the road. And what's actually kind of funny, there was a TechCrunch story about this where it turns out that Manish Arora, who's one of the co-founders, said, you might be surprised, but some of the people who love the service the most and who were using the Chrome extension to the point where we knew that if we made a web app, basically, it would be extremely popular, is students and people who have to hang out in a lot of, you know, conference meetings where you've got a laptop in front of you, and that's totally acceptable, but it would be totally unacceptable to be holding your phone and looking down because you'd be presumed to be texting. This way, you actually don't have to change your behavior at all. But you're actually texting using your computer.
It's an etiquette question.
Pulling one over on somebody. Yeah, exactly.
Jason, is that fair?
What, the digital etiquette?
Yeah. Is that allowed?
Is that allowed? It should be. It should be, right? There's certain things that are – we all have those little things that we do where we have to get our digital fix in. But, you know, the thing that we really need here is we need a universal IM instant messaging service that acts like BBM, which was still kind of the best, the old BlackBerry Messenger, that works across all mobile devices and PCs. That's like what we need. It's like the holy
Samsung
grail.
Samsung has it for you, right?
Get it. Oh, boy.
What's that thing called? Chat On?
Yeah, that's right. They got an iOS app.
They have that. There's lots.
They got an Android app.
That's why I end up defaulting to email, because it's one of the few things. I'm kind of curious of how certain standards work together. There's interoperability at different domain names. That totally works with email. But if you dare use some service over here, like I'll use iMessage, I better make sure that they also have iMessage. It's this like weird polling of your friends. What do you have?
It's like instant messaging, yeah.
Right. So the thing is with Mighty Text, it's supposed to allow you to text, you know, any number that has a number. And it's without having to have a second number like Google Voice or porting it over, it's a good intermediary. I know that I love using my actual keyboard for texting because you accidentally get auto-corrected a lot. I get auto-corrected a lot and end up saying a whole lot of things I never meant to.
Yeah, but that's hilarious, right?
Only – it's hilarious if
– You can say some inappropriate things. I've heard.
Yeah, and you have the excuse like, oh, it was auto-correct. If you're using Mighty Text.
Well, you can still say it's auto-correct, but a different layer.
All right, let's move on to LG starting a new smart TV alliance. It's starting small.
It's starting very small. Okay, so we have a smart TV alliance formed by LG and TPV, and now TPV is TP Vision, which handles Philips-branded televisions around the world, or parts of the world. Now, what is this alliance for? It's a single platform for applications on televisions. If you write an app for one brand of TV, it'll run on others that are part of the alliance. Right now, obviously, there's just two, but the tools are going to be available for free to developers by the end of the year. The SDK is based on HTML5 and other web technologies, and the TVs that have this ability will be available in 2013. So is having a standard for, I guess, right now just two manufacturers, is that going to get people to write apps for televisions?
If you got that standard on enough TVs, it would. The question is, are the TV manufacturers going to join LG when it's maybe not in their best interest to do it yet? It takes that critical mass. How do you get to that critical mass? The way you do that is you have the consumer saying, yes, this is what I want. Sarah, you're a cord cutter. Is this something that would be attractive to you when you – I know you just kind of set up your home theater, but when you're ready to buy another television at some point, is this going to sway you?
Yeah, you know, it might. I'm I hate to say I'm already in the running to buy another TV, but hey, you know, we're always looking. And yeah, I mean, the smarter the TV is at the outset – The more that it has, that I don't have to try to figure out, okay, well, how do I route this through my receiver? And, you know, how can it be smarter on its own is always a good thing. I'm looking forward to this. And I don't think that LG is alone in trying to make the smartest TV possible. I think that that's what all the companies are doing.
Jason, what do you think of LG's attempt to make a cross-platform alliance?
Yeah, so I like the idea that they're at least giving an effort, right, at going cross-platform. I mean, we're going to need something on TVs, and apps on TVs are going to be big. I think that it's destined to happen. You know, who's going to do it? And there's going to be competing ecosystems, definitely. I don't know that how much of a chance this one really stands unless it gets somebody behind it like Roku, maybe, or I mean, who's a loose cannon that, you know, maybe doesn't have their own ecosystem and could use some help? Maybe Sony, maybe, you know, Samsung seems to want to do its own thing. They want to become more of an ecosystem player. Obviously, Apple and Google are going to be all over this space, are going to try to. So yeah, I do think that internet TV is bigger and bigger and more important. We actually lost our internet for 48 hours over the weekend, like from Saturday night until Monday. And I realize we haven't cut the cord, but I realized how much of our stuff that we actually watch over the internet now, you know, either like Apple TV or Roku and other stuff, because it was like, oh, all we have is cable. I realized most of the stuff that we're watching, probably 75%, between, you know, especially we have kids too, and all the kids shows, right, are on Netflix. So you can, pull those up. So it was, I realized it's like, man, I probably could cut the cord. If I was single, I could totally cut the cord.
It's always more complicated when you have more people involved in the decision.
Exactly. Yeah. When it's everybody involved. Because, you know, if everybody has like two shows they watch, right, then, and for me, it is sports once in a while. So I probably couldn't. I'd have to, what, go somewhere
OTA,
and watch.
OTA, and then you don't get everything because so much stuff is on cable now.
Yeah. So this is an important question, and I just don't know if these guys can do it. But it's good that some of these companies are pulling together and trying to figure something out.
I'm not sure everybody wants their apps built into the TV or not. I think it's fine to do that. And you can do a lot with firmware upgrades, but it seems to be that the mindset is that you're locked in to that platform. So the platform has got to be made better to convince people that that's the way they want to go about it. Instead of buying an Xbox or a Roku or an Apple TV or Boxy. Finally, Jack Wallen writing up on Tech Republic today about the U.S. Navy switching the operating system of their choice from Windows to Linux after experiencing a problem with a virus. Wallen reports the U.S. Department of Defense is now laying out guidelines on how its agencies can use open source. Use of open source code would actually alter the GPL, so it's tricky waters for them to navigate. The GPL requires you to contribute your changes back into open source. Military, they like to keep things confidential, so that's going to be a little harder for them. Jason, I particularly, you know, you're EIC, Editor-in-Chief of Tech Republic here. Jack is very enthusiastic about Linux, and it shows, as always, in this post. He lays it out. DoD begins the Linux rollout. U.S. government begins widespread rollout. Civilian security companies begin rollout. Universities fall in line, and then consumers clamor for better security on their operating system. Obviously, pie in the sky there, and he admits that in the column. Yeah. But this is a pretty significant event, isn't it?
Well, so Jack is awesome, and he's one of these guys, these Linux guys who like compiles his own kernel and everything. I mean, this guy's, you know, hardcore Linux and has been doing this and writing about it on Tech Republic really since 1999, since Tech Republic began. So he's serious about this, and he's, you know, every year, right, there's some event that's like, okay, this is it for Linux. And he's actually right on the four steps or five steps you mentioned, and all five have almost kind of already happened, right? Department of Defense, they've actually been doing a lot of this Linux stuff for years. U.S. government as a whole and a lot of governments throughout the world, they're using Linux primarily as much as possible, partially because a lot of them are scared that there are back doors in Windows that, you know, that they may not know about. And it's a legitimate fear. Civilian security companies, I mean, in the security field, Linux is already huge. Universities, it's huge there as well. It's the last one where Jack sort of makes the leap, right? Consumers begin clamoring for better security on their OS. Well, I don't know. I've known a lot of consumers, and security is never sort of number one on their mind.
Sadly, that's true, right? Yeah. I mean, I think a more likely scenario might be they get used to Linux in their jobs if it becomes more widespread in government, mm-hmm. and become more familiar with it. That could help.
Yeah, I mean the best shot for Linux, I think with the masses is more like Android becoming, you know, kind of like what we talked about with in a couple shows before about like WebOS, where you can dock your Android phone and, you know, that becomes your PC, or you can take the Ubuntu for Android, which is coming out and going to be pretty interesting on some devices, and you can take your phone and dock into a PC, and Chrome OS, right, which is built on Android as well. I think that's the best shot for Android to sort of get uptake among consumers and become sort of a popular OS. I just don't think the traditional ways we think about Android, even Ubuntu, which is very easy to use and is a great little operating system. I loaded Ubuntu on the PC for my mom and my mother-in-law, and for, you know, both of them, they've had, you know, a tenth of the problems that they had before when they were on Windows and were getting hit by malware and other spyware and just, you know, gumming up the works and all of that. So it's possible, but it's just not a package solution for the masses.
And Microsoft Windows is actually a lot more secure than it used to be. It's also targeted more often. One problem with Linux becoming more popular on the desktop would be it would be targeted more often. We, you know, OS X is going through those growing pains. So it's not entirely a one-sided, everything's rosy picture here. But I think this is a significant development. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
Let's move on to the randomizer. As I think you spied this on WebMonkey, iPhone and Pure CSS.
Yes. Now, there is an image of an iPhone. At least it's on the video
right
now.
That's a picture of an iPhone. What's so cool about that?
Yeah, that doesn't look cool at all. But what it actually is, this is not an image. This isn't a PNG or anything. This is purely made out of CSS. And if you go to the page...
So this is constructed with code. For anybody who doesn't know, cascading style sheets, that's the code that makes web pages.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, like, I know I've experimented with CSS enough, and you just want to have, like, a little rounded corner on a box, but there's a lot of art effects you could do. And this is basically just like a proof of concept that you, if you wanted to, could make a very elegant and very easily rendered iPhone. This looks like an iPhone 4 or iPhone 4S. There's even reflections and... It just looks like an image from the get-go, but you can actually see the code if you want to learn how to do this yourself. I think it's at codepen.io.
Show that picture again. And if you're on the audio podcast, go to webmonkey.com or go to codepen.io and seek this out. I mean, Sarah, Jason, you guys, that just looks like a picture, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's everything about it looks like some sort of beautiful image that, you know, Apple would send out when, I don't know, they introduced their new iPhone. At least without a magnifying glass, I cannot tell the difference at all. It's really neat.
The CSS developers in the audience are like, anybody could do that. I'm surprised nobody's done that before. 40 Thieves says that in the chair. I'm surprised nobody's done that before. But it's impressive to those of us who can't do it.
Certainly. Or people who have heard what CSS is understand that a lot of really neat graphical things can be reproduced with code, but maybe haven't seen anything like that that was purely made with CSS. You see this every once in a while. Someone will say, look, this is all a cascading style sheet. Isn't that amazing? But this is, it looks like a photographic image.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Carbonite Online Backup. Your computer files should be backed up. If you're not, you're in danger. A hard drive can go anytime. You can get attacked by malware despite all of your best preventative measures. So make sure you're automatically backed up and that you have two backups. One that's local, one in the cloud. Carbonite is a way to do it in the cloud. Get protected with Carbonite. Your files are automatically and continually backed up. They're stored safely offsite. And after you have a computer disaster, it's easy to restore the files. Plus, you can access your backed up files privately on any computer, on your smartphone or iPad, with a free app. You get unlimited backup for your PC or Mac for only $59 a year. A small price to pay for peace of mind. Try it for free. You don't even have to pay a thing to give it a shot. Go to Carbonite.com, enter our offer code TNT, and you'll get two bonus months free if you decide to buy with that offer code TNT. Be sure to sign up for that free trial from the homepage, though, to get the 2 months free if you decide to keep it. No credit card required for the free trial. That's Carbonite.com, offer code TNT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's move on. There's not much on the calendar. We got one thing on the calendar, though, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's been actually a pretty busy week so far. The GigaOm Structure event started today and goes through tomorrow in San Francisco. The big main topic is the Cloud, GigaOM structure event in San Francisco. You can learn more at GigaOM.com/structure.
And now for incoming.
Incoming message.
Rob Barkey liked your Roomba story you talked about yesterday, Iaz. He was listening to Tech News Today on his Samsung Galaxy tab while eating breakfast. He says, I caught myself yelling at the tablet when you guys were talking about the new remote for Roomba. You totally missed the most important point about this remote. Battle Roombas.
I did miss that entirely, and for that, I feel like a fool.
Although battling vacuum cleaners.
For $700 a piece, you could do this with RC cars.
Who wouldn't love that?
Next email from Jason. He's in response to the Spotify story from yesterday. He says, for a long while, I've been a user of Pandora and the Zune Music Pass and its Smart DJ feature, which provides Pandora-like playlist creation, and it works okay for music discovery. My view on the value of social and music has changed in the last year and a half. It was my switch to listening to music mostly on vinyl, gave me a new perspective. Vinyl devotees congregate on internet forums, in record shops. They love to discuss and recommend what they're listening to. I found that this analog social graph has been a really excellent means of finding new music with a high level of successful recommendations. This social graph is not made up of people I would necessarily call good friends, but acquaintances with similar interests. So perhaps what Spotify should do is not switch to the algorithm model or leverage existing social graphs, but create a new graph that consists of expert amateurs and foster vocal community that can share recommendations. It's a matter of having the right social graph for the context. You know, it's interesting. I mentioned earlier that I was speaking a little bit at LaWeb, and one of my talks today was with the CEO of GetGlue, which is a it's a social television watching, share with your friends, and you have similar shows and interests, and you can watch at the same time type of a thing. We were talking about this exact thing because it works that way with music, television shows, clothing. Some of your best friends just don't necessarily have your same tastes. So although I very much would love to know what Tom and Jason and Iaz are listening to, it's not necessarily the right music that's recommended for me. So I think Jason's on to something where it's a mixture between the robots and what the friends want to offer up some intelligent type of playlist. Songza is doing a little bit of this right now. For anybody who's familiar with that app, it's fairly new. Came out in the last couple of weeks. That's trying to put together, you know, what are you in the mood for type of a thing. This is music for good mood versus a foul mood. But yeah, I think the answer lies somewhere between what your friends actually like and what an algorithm might tell you.
Last email from Theo. Hi, TNT team. In your discussion of Google Plus on Flipboard and the lack of a Google Plus app on the iPad, you forgot to mention Google's own Flipboard-like news reading app, Google Currents. It already has the ability to add Google Plusers to the feed and looks great on the iPad. It doesn't, however, have the same brand recognition as Flipboard. I quite like Currents, but have been running Flipboard beta on Android for the last month, and it still has the edge.
I don't think we forgot to mention, Theo. We just forgot it existed. But thanks for the reminder. In any case,
it's not very good either.
You don't like it, huh, Jason?
I don't like it. Yeah, Zeit, actually, I think is better than both of them. Zeit is a really great app.
I forgot about Zeit, too. That's Zeit,
it's on Android now, too. So Zeit, yeah. It was always great on iPad. They brought it to iPhone. Now it's on Android as well. It's awesome.
All right, well, that is it for our show. Thanks to all our subredditors at technewstoday.reddit.com for submitting stories. Thanks to you, Jason Heiner, for joining us. We'll let folks know, of course, techrepublic.com, the place to find your stuff, and jasonheiner.com. What's going on at both of those places?
Yeah, so just, writing about all the crazy new stuff and what's happening. And Tech Republic is a little bit different. Tech Republic is not a news site. Tech Republic is all about tips and tutorials and best practices for technologists. So it's a great place to come for – it's also a peer-to-peer community. So Tech Republic is a great resource for anybody that works in the technology field, from CIOs to developers to network administrators and all of that. You can also find my stuff. I write a regular column on CNET, where I as well now, where I talk a little bit more about the technology industry in general and some consumer tech as well. So you can find me there. And you can always find me on Twitter, just at Jason Heiner.
Thank you, Jason. Always great to have you on the show. And thanks to you, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv. And give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Peter Rojas from Gadget. See you then.